Wonderful. Hi, folks. So this isn't a trick question. Where would you find the majority of English people in the world? In the pub? Maybe. A bit more generally? In England. What would be some of the notable features of the English landscape and monuments that might come to mind? Or Big Ben. Excellent. Good. We've got the ball rolling. Let's keep going. Stonehenge. Yep. Number three. Nelson's Column, Buckingham Palace. Excellent. Okay, let's should we move on to Russia? Where do you find the majority of Russians? Oh, in Russia. And let's have some monuments and features. Kremlin, Red Square. One more. Winter Palace, lovely. And then France. The French. Give it away. Any French monuments? Eiffel Tower. Arc de Triomphe. Nelson's Column, Sacré-Cœur. Nelson's Column. Very good, James. Very good. Okay, and Jewish people? Oh, slight tricky question. Do you know the majority of Jewish people aren't in Israel? South America, are they? Okay, cool. Interesting, because so all of this you can see on the map, can't you? If we had a nice map here, we'd probably have England sort of there in the middle somewhere. And what do we have? Russia up there. We can sort of picture where these things... We can Google Earth down into Nelson's Column or into the Kremlin. I don't know if we can or not. Maybe into the Kremlin. Into Eiffel Tower. I just did a little look at it last week. And actually, the Jewish people have spent less time as a nation in the nation of Israel than they have out of it. So there was obviously Egypt and there was the exile and so on and the desert time. But then from about AD 70, when they were expelled... really by the Romans, a lot of them left Israel. And so from that's about AD 70, right through to 1948 when the State of Israel was established, almost 2,000 years, there weren't very many Jewish people in Israel. So it's a little bit, they've obviously got this at the Sea of Galilee, the River Jordan, the Jerusalem and so on, which you could look at on a map. But actually, if you want to say, where are the Jewish people? You might not go so much to a map as you might go to a calendar. Ooh, a calendar or a diary. Because something that's been described as a cathedral in time or a monument in time is the Jewish Sabbath. So that's a distinguishing feature of the Jewish people throughout history, for thousands of years, wherever they've been in the world, whether they've been in persecution in different parts of the world or flourishing and plentiful in other parts. The Jewish Sabbath has been a regular feature, Saturday, a day of rest, a holy day, through the history of the Jewish people. So the Sabbath began in Genesis, didn't it? It started at the start of the Bible. So God created the world. It's the sixth-day description, poetic description of how the world was created. And then on the seventh day, it says that God rested. He looked at what he'd made, and he rested. So it begins right there. But then also, we see in that when God gave Moses and the Jewish people the Ten Commandments, a key feature within those ten was the Sabbath, keeping the Sabbath, this day of rest, this holy day. And I've found this strange because the Ten Commandments form a basis for our morality, Christian morality, and so much of our morality today. It seems a really good model for how a sort of moral system. But there's this one law, the Sabbath one, seems a bit of an odd one out because it's not sort of relevant anymore. It's kind of obsolete. I find that slightly strange. Let's have a little look at a bit of the law that was given about this. So this is Deuteronomy chapter 5, and it says there, so this is the Old Testament, early books of the Bible, nation of Israel being formed. Observe the Sabbath day by keeping it holy, as the Lord your God has commanded you. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work, neither you, nor your son or daughter, nor your male or female servant, nor your ox, your donkey, or any of your animals, nor any foreigner residing in your towns, so that your male and female servants may rest as you do. Remember that you were slaves in Egypt, and that the Lord your God brought you out of there with a mighty hand and an outstretched arm. Therefore the Lord your God has commanded you to observe the Sabbath day. So from the time of Jesus, as the church grew, the Jewish Christians would keep Sabbath, but as the church grew into the non-Jewish world, into what's called the Gentile world, people who weren't Jewish, God said that they no longer needed to keep Sabbath as they had previously. So this is an example of that from Colossians, Paul's writing to the church here, which is sort of Turkey-ish, and he writes, so don't let anyone condemn you for what you eat or drink, or for not celebrating certain holy days, or new moon ceremonies, or Sabbaths. For these rules are only shadows of the reality yet to come, and Christ himself is that reality. So, interesting, just talked about an original feature of creation and of the law, but we said it's no longer relevant to us today. So, Christopher, what are you doing talking about Sabbath? What's the point? And my point is this. This is a quote that I've just Googled in the week, but you could probably find similar sorts of quotes all over the place. It's from a broadcasting lady called Joan Bakewell. And she said this, "The pace of life has literally quickened. Going to the underground to me is to join a whirlwind of people hurrying past me, eager to get somewhere, anywhere, as quickly as possible. Why? What's so urgent? Surely only a dying relative or an ailing child could justify such unrelenting urgency. Yet we live in an urgent world, urgent to get on in life, to get the best job, the best car. It's damaging family life and taking its toll on people's health. Mothers and fathers both work. At the same time, they want their children to attend a whole gamut of after-school activities, cram every moment with dancing lessons, piano lessons, football, scouts, brownies. There's no time left for simply being together, unstructured family time. The world is getting even more frantic. What are we doing to ourselves? This is not the way. There's no way this cannot impact on health." Don't know if that relates to you or speaks to you in any way. It does to me. And you might add into the mix, the kind of whole smartphone thing. And our phones are bleeping and vibrating 24/7. There's this sort of continuation of availability. I was thinking as well, Vicky just here, Stansfield, and Susie Davies are both doctors at the same surgery. It's really nice. They actually share a room, and they work mostly with students in Bristol. And a comment that they both made is that the majority of cases that they see amongst the student population in Bristol is mental health. And that's been quite a change, I think, in recent years. And we know that mental health for children, for adults, for students across the board is a bigger deal now than it used to be. And I think a particular way that I relate to this question of sort of non-stop busyness and so on is about 4 or 5 years ago, we had to kind of significantly restructure our life, Alice and me, and me particularly, because I was getting tonsillitis 4 times a year just from being exhausted. And so for over a 2-3 year period, I was getting it 3, 4, 5 times a year. And I wasn't having enough rest. I love my work. I work hard. I enjoy that. And I wasn't taking enough time to stop, and I was getting burnt out. So this next quote is one of his most famous quotes. And as I've been praying about this talk, I feel like this is the thing he really wants to focus on. This was the sort of main thing that kept coming to me as I was praying. And Jesus said this, Mark 11, "Come to me, all you who are weary and heavy burdened, and I will give you rest." So for a long time, I thought that I kind of subconsciously assumed that that meant that's pie in the sky when we die. It's basically when we die, we'll enter this eternal rest because of our faith in Jesus, because he died for our sins on the cross and rose from the dead. We have this assurance of eternity with God, and that will be a place of peace and joy and health and so on. And that's what it meant by rest, and it does mean that. But I think also, to sort of look at it with a less spiritual lens, it also means rest. rest in this life. You know, you see that through Jesus' other teaching. You see that he says, I've come to bring you fullness of life. And he shows that, doesn't he? Through healing the sick, through raising the dead, through feeding people who are hungry, through being kind to people, through teaching us how not to worry, how to have faith, how to trust in him, and how to do life really well every day is so much of what Jesus came to bring. You might call it steak on the plate as you wait, as well as pie in the sky when you die. You know, there's that sort of thing. So it's the now and it's the future. And this is it for me. I think one of the ways that we can demonstrate to this world the love of God, you know, as Christians, part of what we do is we're ambassadors for Christ, aren't we? And we are, Jesus called us the light of the world. He was the light of the world, and he said of us, we're the light of the world. Believers are the light of the world. We're the salt of the earth. Nice, bit of backup. And we're called to bring hope to all people. Oh, shall we sing this bit? And And I think one of the ways that we need another little strum, because this is Silas, can you do a little strum for us? Can you do like a dramatic something? No, okay, fine. I like those sort of Pentecostal churches where they have a bass guitar thumping along, but you know, building up to a crescendo. This is the English crescendo moment, which is but I think that one of the ways we can bring hope to the world is by being a people who can rest well. And I think that's a massive thing that our world needs. Our world needs to be able to stop, slow down, and rest. And as we've said, the Sabbath is not a rule anymore, as it was for the Jewish people. You could get stoned in the old days if you didn't keep the Sabbath. But it's not a rule anymore as it was. But I think it's something that's been well documented in the Bible. It's been well lived through history. And I think it's something that we can look at as Christians as a sort of an example of what does good rest, what does healthy rest look like, and what can we learn from that. So I'm not saying we've got to all do a Sabbath, but I'm saying I want to describe it to us and let us look at it so that we can see how can we as people rest really well. On top of that, Alice and I actually have been keeping a Sabbath for the last couple of years. And we've been doing it now for 2-3 years. And I'd like to share some of our experiences from that. And then at New Wine last year, there was a brilliant guy who was speaking called John Mark Comer. And those of us who were there found him really helpful. He wrote this book called Garden City. And he did a series actually at New Wine on the practices of Jesus. So our series that we're in now was inspired by what he brought. And one of the things he brought was about Sabbath, about rest. And so I've got some quotes from some of the people who are at New Wine who've also been practicing this, working on this for the last 6 months in different ways. So we're going to look at Sabbath as a kind of, it's not really a mirror, it's maybe something to gaze upon and and think of as we consider our own lives, okay? And there are these four features to it that I want to speak to. Stop, rest, worship, and feast. So that bit in Deuteronomy was pretty clear that on the Sabbath it was important to stop and to not work. Okay, yep. Animals, your ox, I don't know what they do with hamsters or walking dogs. But anyway, animals not to work, servants are not to work on the Sabbath. And so ask the question, what's work? For some people it's a 9-to-5 paid or voluntary day job. For others it's being a full-time parent. I expect for most of us, it might involve some part of looking after our home, maybe some cleaning, maybe some admin, some bills, some fixing things, some food preparation, all of these things. Education, of course, those who are in education, all of these aspects of work. And so what we do in our home is we actually have a Sabbath from Friday evening. Sort of Friday tea time through to Saturday evening, and that's part of the reason I was getting exhausted four or five years ago was I was seeing Sunday as just a normal day. I mean, for many of you, it's a day off. For me, it's one of my hardest working days actually. But I was trying to be, like, I'm a member of the church. I'm part of the church. I don't really want to be distinguished in that way. So I was just sort of working very hard for 6 days, and so we have our Sabbath as a Saturday day. Whereas some others might do it on a Sunday. So we start from... So my days off are Friday and Saturday. So Friday I do all of the jobs around the house, all the things that need doing and to look after at home. And the aim is that by Friday evening, when the kids are home, we're going to start tea, as much as possible that stuff's done, and then we can just start to relax for our Sabbath time. So there's something about... So the first feature is stopping. Stopping, ceasing work. And the next one is resting. Resting will be different for different people. For me, it's gardening. A little look around. I normally see some very frowning faces when I say that. For a lot of people, gardening is really hard work. And not at all fun. Esther relates. Yeah. There's something about this practicing of Sabbath or learning to discover what is effective and good rest, which is a bit of an art, and I think it is something that we kind of learn over time. So I quite enjoy when I've got a little bit of space, I'll pop this out and I'll browse Facebook, Instagram, BBC News. Those are my kind of things that I quite enjoy looking at. But I've discovered that it's not really very restful for me. It's a sort of nervous twitch or something, you know, rather than something that actually brings me life and recharges me. So my practice is that on my Sabbath time, I don't really use my phone. Might take a few photographs, but I don't do any social media, and I just try and live apart from that. And in a funny way, that is restorative to my soul. So what we tend to do on our Sabbath time is Alice and I have a lie-in, and the children, the boys particularly, find that a bit difficult, but they're getting used to it. And we probably don't get out of our pajamas until midday. We choose that we don't do any kids clubs and things. We don't take the boys to football or any of that stuff on our Sabbath time. They do still go to children's parties and things. We're not party poopers. So there's a bit of ferrying around quite often. And then we quite enjoy watching sport. So we've enjoyed the Winter Olympics. We've been watching the Six Nations rugby. I didn't find yesterday very restful, actually. It's quite, especially the second half was very stressful. It didn't end very well. Congratulations. Johnny's not here, is he? It's Mr. Maley. No. So that's something for us that we've found, that sort of sport is quite an energizing connection, family time. And then feast. So Sabbath within the Jewish world, I think it was quite a lot about eating meals together and eating really nice food as a family or an extended family or inviting friends as well to join in with that. And what we do is we have intentionally nice food on our Sabbaths. So we start with Friday nights, we do homemade pizzas, and then we watch an inspirational movie. We're running a bit short of inspirational movie ideas, so if you've got any good ones, let me know. But an inspirational family movie. And then Saturday morning we have, lots of people, we have sort of pancakes or bacon and eggs, something again that's nice and a bit different and a bit more special than just the normal cereal. And actually I'm quite looking forward to this. We've got this church lunch here at Hope next Sunday actually. And that, I like that partly because it feels quite Sabbathy. It feels like we're coming together as a church family and we're going to be feasting, eating together and having some fun. And I think that feasting component, it isn't just about the food, it's also about the relationship. And for me personally, I'm quite a jobs-oriented person. I have a list in my head or on paper, and I like working the plan. I like doing work. So for me, it's quite an uncomfortable thing to say, okay, I can't do any jobs on a Saturday. Part of me thinks, what a waste of time. I could be really productive here. But I know that my nature would be that I would probably be doing jobs rather than, for example, engaging with our children. So part of, I think, the feasting element for us is we'll spend time, we'll play some sports, we'll just play some board games or whatever, and it's an intentional time of investing in relationship, which I feel sort of, you know, cajoled into having to do because I'm making my commitment to this intentional feasting. And then the fourth dimension, the fourth facet is worship. And this is obviously an expression of that. So through the New Testament, you see Jesus going to the synagogue each Sabbath, which for them was on Saturday. It says, as was his custom, he'd do it each time. And so there's this thing of coming together to worship as a community like this. And so the other things that we do like a Bible time anyway over breakfast. So we do that on our Sabbath. And Alice and I will take some time, we'll have a coffee, and we're reading a Heidi Baker devotional right now. And we'll read some Bible together. And I just try and posture myself more towards God in our Sabbath time. And, you know, obviously my job is I'm a sort of full-time Christian, or sort of professional, whatever you want to call it. So if I'm not connecting with God, there's a bit of a concern there during the week. But I have a slightly different posture on a Sabbath, which is a more restful one. And even actually in our prayers, we were just tweaking this yesterday, weren't we, Alice? Even in our prayers, we try not to pray about sort of work stuff. We try to pray about it's just appreciating who God is, and it's kind of the foot off the gas, I guess, is the kind of image, foot off the gas, and related to God, not so that anything can get done, but just taking time to appreciate and connect and have relationship with Him, and this is where I say it's a bit of an art because it's a learning thing, and I think I'm discovering it in time how to connect with God well, what works and what doesn't work. So I normally have a Christian book that I'm reading. Lots of people in the church right now are reading Dirty Glory. Should we have some hands up for Dirty Glory readers? Look at that. Wow. Goodness me. I'm about to start. It's on my bedside table. Recommended book by Pete Gregg. And I just sent a quick text to a few people from Hope here at New Wine in the summer who I knew had been experimenting with some of this Sabbath stuff. And I just got a little few comments from them to throw in. So Jason and Charlotte, we've been doing the Sabbath thing. It's taken a while to get into it, trying to get used to the extra stuff involved with being new parents. It's helped us to slow down our pace of life and be more selective of what to pick up and let go of in this season. We've been more disciplined to get things done on Saturday, and we've been refreshed by having a time set aside to relax and to rest, and we felt more attuned to God and hearing Him. And then Charlotte would be slightly more extrovert and saying that she, for her, having Sabbath time as recharging through connecting with other people is quite an empowering thing as well. I would tend to be more introverted personally, so I find time on my own a bit more energizing. And I think that's part of understanding ourselves and knowing what helps us to rest. We haven't been too legalistic about it, but our guide on appropriate Sabbath activity is whether something brings us life and pushes us closer to God. Then the Hucketts, Simon and Becca Huckett, were saying that they kind of run a Sabbath from Saturday midday-ish till Sunday midday-ish. And for them, they're a highly sporting family, so they're always doing loads of sporty stuff. So on their Sabbath time, they try not to do any individual sports, but they just do things together as a family. And that's a focus for them. And then Hannah Lehman, was saying that this teaching has helped her to give purpose to her days off, to think about what energizes her and what tires her out. So Friday is a day for chores, appointments, or seeing people. Saturday, her Sabbath, is for quiet time alone, to be outside, see beautiful things, may do fun stuff with friends too. Sundays is quite a busy day for her at Hope, and then a big community lunch afterwards, which is good, but it's also quite tiring. So recognizing what gives her life and gives her energy. She's also now trying to have occasional days completely away as well, kind of like retreats. Not letting tasks and jobs spread and fill every day of the week is great. Being busier on 6 days so that she can stop on one is worth it. And so there's a little sort of picture of what Sabbath could be like. And I mean, certainly for us, it's by no means a kind of desert island, just us and the Lord kind of glorious time. You know, yesterday was quite stressful yesterday at times. I had a couple of hours, I was feeling just quite angry, quite frustrated with the kids. They were arguing quite a lot. And kind of just working through that. I'm thinking, this just doesn't feel very Sabbathy. The rugby, as I say, was not a good ending to things. And but actually, I lay in bed last night and I thought, yeah, there's been some stress today. It hasn't felt like the textbook perfect time of rest and connection with God. But actually, strangely, I do feel restored. And I do feel, and as I say, I like working hard. It gives me, I look forward to Sabbath starting, and I look forward to it finishing. I look forward to that different tempo of life, that different space of life, and I look forward to getting back into work again afterwards. So what I've been trying to show here is that, you know, for me, the word Sabbath was historically a kind of a nasty word, an unpleasant word. I don't do this, don't do that. Only play with these wooden Noah's Ark toys if you're a child. Horrible, heavy, blah, 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 don't. And actually, I think it's something actually that's far more beautiful, something that's far more creative. It's not a list of don'ts. It's about creating a space, a cathedral in time. I love that image. Isn't that cool? A cathedral in time, a palace in time to run into, to celebrate, to bring life and energy, to recharge, to connect, to slow down. And I think all of these things are really good for us. So as I said a little while ago, how do we as church bring hope to all people through the good news of Jesus Christ? I think through being a people that can rest and are able to rest well in a re-energizing way. I think, and looking at you, you have a lot of influence across the city, across the villages, across the area around us. If you were a person who could rest really well and others could see it, I think they could have a transformative effect on our society, giving other people permission to slow down, to stop, and so on. Just coming back to that verse that Jesus said, "Come to me, all you who are weary, and I will give you rest." Another thought on that for me was that, and this is about learning how to rest. Maybe I've had a difficult conversation with someone, and I'm just feeling wired in my mind. You know, when you're sort of running through, you're replaying a conversation, you can feel the tension in your stomach, and you're just sort of quietly manifesting, simmering, stirring. Actually, where Jesus says, "Come to me, and I will give you rest." That often can feel like the last thing that I want to do. I want to just go and flop in front of a TV and just check out. And you know, there are times when I think watching TV is a restorative and a healthy thing, But in those times, actually, what's most healthy is to go to Jesus with that, and to you know, if I've said inappropriate stuff, to repent and process with him, or if I need to forgive someone, to forgive. And I think that is part of going to him to find rest, to find life, to find peace, to find joy. So I wonder how rest is for you. I've got some handouts here which have got some little provocative probing questions. And there's a link to that book and some of the teaching actually by John Mark Comer, this guy we mentioned from New Wine, which I'd really recommend. He's really good. But I just want to finish with 3 points on Sabbath. And as I say, I'm not saying we've all got to do the Sabbath thing, but I'm saying it's healthy for all of us to look at how we rest. And the model of Sabbath could be something that we look at and maybe pick some bits out of, some principles that are helpful. So 3 things on Sabbath. First of all, Sabbath is worship. It's saying, God, we love you, and we put you first in our lives, in our time. We're building a cathedral of time into our life. Secondly, I think Sabbath is an act of faith. And it's saying, God, we trust that actually if we have a day of stopping, yes, we're called to steward the earth and we're called to take responsibility, and you've given us this mandate to work and so on. But actually bigger than that, we trust that you are God and that you hold the world together in your hands, and that it's not all on me, but that actually you're bigger. And so I think it's a bit like tithing. You know, when we give first fruits to God, we're trusting that it feels a bit hairy, but that actually he'll provide for us. And I think it's the same thing with this. It's trusting that I can take my foot off the gas, and the car's not going to just die. It's not going to be all over. So I think Sabbath is an act of faith. And thirdly, Sabbath is an act of identity. And I think it's saying that, and I, as I look at it through the Bible, I just think, isn't it awesome that God built with such intentionality this enforced rest to his people, to building a nation that would enable them to thrive and to flourish. It's interesting, the other ancient nations, civilizations, Romans, Egyptians, Greeks, all those guys, they didn't have a day off. They would just beast it 7 days a week. And they would often mock the Jewish people, saying, you're lazy, you have a day off once a week, you know, and look down on them. But obviously now the national standard in the West is to have a two-day weekend, isn't it? It's a recognition that rest is important. And so Sabbath is identity. It's saying that, it's knowing that we're loved by God, we're his sons, we're his daughters, we're his children, and he wants the best for us. And yes, we need to step up and engage well with life, but actually he wants to give us space and time within that to slow down, to be at peace, and to relax.
Great. So I want to do 2 things. First of all, what we wanted to do after this service was we wanted to give an opportunity for people to respond. So that could look like a myriad of different things. But today, what we wanted to do is we wanted to pray together as a church and as a family. Silas, would you mind joining me? And Annie too. Feel free. No? Cool. So what we wanted to do is we wanted to pray for people. But what we're also aware of is it's midday, so parents need to go pick up kids. But that's not the end of the service. That's just a quick thing that if parents need to go pick up kids, that's great. And so beforehand, before the service, and you might have heard stuff today, you might have felt things related to Mother's Day or related to what Chris has been saying or in the midst of worship, like God's speaking to us all the time. And so you might have been triggered. There might have been a word that someone shared with you or whatever it may have been. And beforehand, we spent a little bit of time praying upstairs, getting words. And so Silas has got a few of those written down, and we just want to share those. And if any of those speak to you, stir you, if there's anything that you've got upon your heart, I just want you to hold on to that, because we want to pray with you. We want to pray for you.
Okay, so some of you, just as Tom said, it might just be something that's been stirred. So you can literally turn to your neighbor and say, that thing that Chris has said, I just want to pray about that right now. Okay? So we respond. We recognize something, we respond. The The other words we had was, for some of us, you might have come here and you can't find rest at the moment just in normal life, because actually the dominant thing is a broken relationship. That's the dominant thing. And however much people we might have worshipped this morning or been listening or listening, trying to actually, the thing that is still dominating you is a broken relationship. And we'd love to pray for anyone in that. And when I say that, it could just be a friendship, something that's broken down in some form, and that is the predominant thing. And you can't rest, you can't find rest at all, because that's the dominant thing. Okay? And believe the Lord wants to bring healing and restoration and forgiveness. Okay? The other thing, so that's kind of like a big issue that prevents rest. And then one other thing, which was just a picture, this is just a picture of in our garden at home, we've got these, this time of the year, I love putting the, putting bird seed back into the little bird seed holder things. And over the winter, the birds aren't there. But then, so I went and I bought these, my bird seed from Range, and I poured it in, and over the last 2 days I've watched these little birds begin to get confidence. But to start with, because there hasn't been anything there, they come, they fly, they have a little look, and they run off, but they don't actually take any seed. But then today one of them actually stuck his beak in, had a little bit of seed, ran off or flew off, and about 15 seconds later his mate came and he went and had some. Now, what's that about? I think sometimes we've lost trust in something and we're beginning to just step in, but we're not quite sure. The promise, the thing that we need is there, but we've lost the confidence. If that's you, and you feel like you know that's good for you, the seed is good for the bird, but actually you're rather frightened. You're frightened to go back into that place again. If that's you, that makes sense, please come and come and be prayed for. Lovely jubbly. So just to remind you again, it could be something Chris said. You might have been coming thinking something different this morning, but he said something and it has triggered something and you're thinking, that's for me. In that case, you don't have to come here to be prayed for. You can literally turn to the person next to you and say, I recognize something Chris said. I recognize that. Can you pray for me now? Okay? Can you witness to the fact that he's shown me something? Brilliant. Okay? You can do that, and off you go. But if it's something of those other pictures, come up here. Okay, Rob, can you play? So Rob's going to be playing just behind, a little bit more worship. Okay? So let's be people, feel free to come and respond to any of those. Okay.